And welcome back to Breakthrough Entertainment right here on 1480 AM KPHX. Greg Isaac, Joseph Erdo, and of course Eric Reinert. And actually, this is kind of nice music.
This is very sophisticated music. It's not from a movie. It's just... I'm kidding.
It's Beethoven.
Yes, Beethoven, the theme from Knowing.
Okay, yeah, Nicholas Cage.
It's not actually Beethoven, but he wrote it.
Right. Beethoven's a dog. He can't perform anything.
Yeah, he's a pretty smart dog.
St. Bernard's can play music.
I bet that dog could actually do that back in his day.
Yeah,
that's pretty smart dog.
We'll have to have a dog show on, have an expert on.
Yeah, no, absolutely. And, of course, before you experience a big earthquake, you want to get in touch with Business Owner Tax Relief. They'll help you explore how to reduce your taxes for all eligible companies, schools, and municipalities. Give them a call, 623-888-3210, 623-888-3210, or visit them online, azbotr.com.
That was good music for that, too.
Yeah, it was.
Absolutely.
That worked out really
well. We'll have to do that every time.
Yeah. It's also good introduction music for our next guest, Dr. Christine Goulette, Assistant Researcher at University of California, Berkeley's Pacific Earthquake Engineering. I don't know what I'm doing. This is a long title she's got. Earthquake Engineering Research Center. I'm going to say it a few more times throughout this segment. But Dr. Goulette, thank you so much for joining us.
My pleasure. And you can say PEER. It's known as the Pacific Earthquake Engineering Research Center, and we call it PEER.
PEER, okay.
UC Berkeley.
That's
much shorter,
yes.
Yes. Well, you know, we have you on in honor of Breakthrough Entertainment's Natural Disaster Show. Greg and I gave two huge thumbs up to San Andreas in our last hour. We love the movie. We saw it in D-Box. It made it even better. I understand that you saw the movie in IMAX.
Yes, I went to see it in IMAX 3D yesterday, and I had a blast. It was really fun and entertaining, and it was really worth it. I wish I've had D-Box here as well.
I think that you'd really enjoy it, but you can't go wrong with IMAX either. And wow, so it's three thumbs up now. We're racking up the thumbs up.
Absolutely.
Yeah, well, okay, it's fun for an entertainment movie if you're asking me if the science is correct. No, but it was still really fun and entertaining. I laughed a lot, and some people looked at me next to me. They were like, they looked like they were freaked out, but I was having fun.
Well, because you're watching it in a little bit different way than they were watching it. So
yes, absolutely.
So
yes.
Things that were probably, you know, even funnier to you. Right.
Oh yes.
I might have to go see this today.
Yeah, I think so. Yeah.
Oh yeah. No, it's entertaining. That's for sure. Action packed. And there are a few things that are good technically or somewhat about it. But I think that if you talk to any aviation specialist, which I'm not, they would say there's just as much impossible things with the way they use the helicopters and the planes that the earthquake science, you know, there's a lot of issues with that movie, of course, like most movies.
Well, yeah. So tell us a little bit about the, you know, fact versus fiction. First of all, actually, I want you to promote this event that you have on Monday night, right?
Yes. So we have two very good scientists who are part of the Seismological Society of America. And they're going to answer questions. They have a Q&A event on Twitter. And the hashtag for that is AskSSA, so A-S-K-S-S-A.
Okay.
And you can ask all kinds of questions, and they will answer with the correct science and clarifying maybe questions the audience might have.
Okay, excellent. And what, you know,
it's Monday from 7 to 8 p.m. Pacific time.
And that's time in Arizona right now as Pacific.
Yes.
So 7 to 8, excellent. And we'll mention that again before the segment's over. But so, you know, give us a little bit of a behind the scenes scoop on, you know, fact versus fiction. I mean, is what was it, a 9.6?
Yeah,
I think so.
Is that possible?
No, not in California. Absolutely not. Most earthquakes, well, all earthquakes, now that I think about it, above 8.5, are always going to happen in subduction zones. So north of California, like the coast of Vancouver, you saw Japan, Alaska, Chile, Sumatra, all these big subduction zones. But the San Andreas and any other faults we have within the continent here, cannot really go much higher than 8.2, 8.3, maybe a little bit more, but very marginally larger. So, and that's because magnitude is something that relates the area of the fault slipping and the amount of slip. And in the continental crust here in California, the fault is really long, but it's not very deep. There's no way you can have an event larger than about 8.3. So it would not happen.
That's
but you don't
big,
need
though,
that
right?
large of an event to cause a lot of damage. So, you know, that's...
But 8.3 is pretty large, isn't it?
Oh, yeah, it's big.
Is that what they're kind of expecting, something in that 8.3 range when California, you know, does have that big earthquake? Because I remember, you know, I was in the Northridge quake in 94.
Yeah, so was I.
And Eric as well. And, you know, was that like 6.6, 6.7, 6.8, something
yeah,
like
6,
that?
Yeah, 6.7, yeah.
And I remember everyone calling into the radio, oh, was that the big one? And they're like, no. So how big are they expecting that whenever it may occur?
So it could be up to 8.2, 8.3, realistically, maybe a little bit larger, but that's the San Andreas. But yeah. When you talk about Northridge, you talk about a situation that's a bit different. You're right above the fault if you're in the valley. You're very close to built area. So the earthquake itself is not the only thing when we think about the impact on human beings. It's not that there's a big earthquake. If it happens in the middle of nowhere, who cares, right? So it's in L.A., for example, the worst-case scenario would be a fault called Puente Hills. That is kind of like Northridge, but right underneath downtown. And it's so close that even if it ruptures at a 6.7, it could cause much more damage potentially than the San Andreas that's further away. Not the same type of damage, that's for sure.
Now, in the film, you know, all the different points go off at the same time. It has along the San Andreas. Is that possible? Does that usually happen, or is it, I mean?
No, you know, I'm just thinking of this analogy here. But when you have a crack on your windshield, mm-hmm. it starts somewhere and it propagates, right?
Mm-hmm. Yes.
That's exactly the same thing with an earthquake.
Oh, okay.
So it usually starts in the weakest point. And it propagates, and sometimes as it propagates, it triggers another point somewhere else, but it doesn't rupture all at once. It's something that really propagates and moves forward. So if you were in a very large event and you're here in LA and it starts here, you're going to feel the shaking at the beginning, but as it gets further away, it could go forever, that earthquake, and you won't feel the ground motions at some point because the rupture is so far away. So you have to consider that.
So when you, you know, for years you've been hearing like the coastline of California is going to change when the big one hits. That's not possible, right?
No. And so that brings me to the other big inconsistency is that whenever there's an earthquake, and my boyfriend tells me all the time, I told you we're going to fall in the hole, but it's not going to happen. So there could be cracks due to an earthquake near a fault. But the reason there's an earthquake is because the two parts of the fault, each side, the walls, brush against each other, and it really creates this friction. That's what makes the earthquake, the earth shaking. So if it was to open up, there wouldn't be any earth shaking because there's no contact. So that's the thing that's always portrayed in movies that I was expecting, and yes, it was there, but it's not plausible.
Once again, for our listeners, if you're just now joining us, we're speaking with Dr. Christine Goulet, assistant researcher at the University of California, Berkeley's Peer Center. That's the Pacific Earthquake Engineering Research Center. Now, Dr. Goulet,
Is it Goulet or Goulet?
Oh, Goulet. But
Goulet,
That is
You're always getting everyone's name wrong.
I know, I should have asked.
You can
sorry.
Call me Christine, it's much easier.
All right. We're honored to have you, by the way, because it's very fascinating, especially after seeing the film. But yeah, I had someone ask me, and I had no idea the answer. I thought that I knew, but now the tsunami that occurs, when an earthquake happens...
That the funny part.
Does that happen? I mean, is a tsunami...
Well, my question is, if the San Andreas Fault is where the earthquake occurs, then how could a tsunami come into California? It would be going away, wouldn't it?
There wouldn't be a tsunami at all.
Okay.
So you're on the right track. So what causes a tsunami is when there's a large displacement of the water in the ocean, right? So that can happen with a subduction, a zone where one part shifts up relative to the other or down, or if you have a big landslide offshore somewhere. But the San Andreas doesn't displace water. It moves laterally. There's no difference in elevation when it ruptured, and that was correct in the film. Even it had this big hole. Both parts were the same elevation at the end. So it ruptures past each other and doesn't move water. So we could have earthquakes in California, but they would, tsunamis in California, but they would come from, like we had in Japan, there was a tsunami in California. It was not large, but caused a lot of damage. It could be from Alaska or offshore landslide, but not from any event occurring on the actual continent here. And by the way, it doesn't happen like a nice, beautiful, big wave that breaks. It's not. that was really funny.
It was one of the best scenes of the movie. I mean, especially when the Rock's on that boat, and we don't want to spoil what happens, but when you...
Yeah, when he gets caught in the propeller, man, that was amazing.
Yeah.
Only the Rock could do that.
Oh, yeah.
Now, speaking of damage, though, because from my understanding, I'm under the impression a lot of the newer buildings and, you know, Southern California, I'm sure Northern California as well, are more earthquake-proof, per se. When the big one hits, or if there is a big one, you know, in the film, obviously, you see whole buildings come down, stuff like that. But is that something that would happen, or where entire buildings could end up collapsing? Or
It could happen. So, again, one thing is there's no such thing as earthquake-proof.
Oh, okay.
People
resistant.
Think that because you build the building code, the building is going to stand and it's going to be fine and you're going to go back to work the next day. The purpose of the building code is life safety, and it's to design it so that it should not collapse, right? And it's based on experience and this and that. So there are buildings that are older, some that were built in the 60s in L.A., for example, that have poor reinforcement, like we call non-ductile concrete structures, that could collapse. But it's not going to be as widespread as we saw in the movie, where every building is cracked from all over and it seems to explode from the middle floors. And this was really extreme damage. That's not something you expect. So you might have a few buildings that will collapse, but most of them will have damage that, to the naked eye, you might not even really see.
Okay.
But they might still need to be destroyed after the event because they're not going to be stable in the future, but most of them won't collapse. Otherwise, it would be really bad.
No,
but it could happen. Some could collapse, absolutely. Unreinforced masonry, poorly constructed buildings, especially those before the 70s or right up to 72, 74. It could, but not in the catastrophic manner that we saw.
Right. Now, one of my favorite visuals from the film is the actual, like, wide view of California, and we see the ground kind of move, like if you were to take a bed sheet and kind of, like, throw it over the bed,
right.
And you see the ground.
Yeah, that looks nice.
Yeah, that's not going to happen either, right? You're not going to have, like,
no,
a rolling...
not to that amplitude. There have been witness accounts of seeing the earth to roll, you know, over... for people where I think it was in the Owens Valley at some point. And that's actually my secret dream when I fly over the San Andreas near Palm Springs. Whenever I fly, I look down and look at it. It's like, man, that would be nice to see this. But it's not going to be to the large waves that you saw. Some people can see rolling motions, absolutely, but not to the scale you saw. But it was a nice shot. The effects were nice in the movie.
Oh, they were.
Oh, yeah. No, absolutely. And, you know, and something also brought up in the movie earlier on is maybe some unknown faults that are found. Does that happen a lot? You know,
yeah.
Where okay, it's. I mean, is that something where there's like millions and millions of faults out there, or what
well,
type of number,
you know,
do you think?
You mentioned you lived through Northridge. Northridge
yeah.
was not a known fault when the earthquake occurred.
Oh, okay.
So, but the way we do hazard assessment or design, we do account for that by putting potential earthquakes pretty much everywhere that could occur on a fault that is now unknown. So outside of the big San Andreas and those that we see the fault trace and this and that, those that are known. So that this is accounted for in general for building design, because it's part of it's in there. It's put as part of the uncertainty. So there are a lot of faults that we don't know, but not of the size of San Andreas. These are easy to see for even the novice eye. Just looking, you see it. So that's different.
Now, Christine, I want to also thank you, one, for joining us, but also for indulging us in our questions, primarily around the movie. I know initially when I reached out to you, I said that this was going to be just a general Earthquake San Andreas conversation, but since you saw the film, I'm so glad that we could kind of like dive into this. This is something that we can rarely do on Breakthrough Entertainment and really talk about the fact versus fiction. But I also do want to touch on something that's unrelated to the film. Any idea if Phoenix, are we going to have any earthquakes in Arizona at all? Or is that only if the Rock causes an earthquake in California and then, we feel it on the East Coast?
No. So first, you're not going to feel it on the East Coast. Okay. That's for sure, because that's too far. But you could feel it somewhere, Nevada, maybe Arizona. If it happens in San Andreas in the southern part, I'm sure some people in Arizona will feel it. But if there's a certain distance to which the ground motion's attenuated, you don't feel it anymore. So extremely sensitive instruments can pick that up pretty much around the world, but the human beings, we can't. So that's definitely... there earthquakes can occur pretty much anywhere in the U.S., the sizes differ. So California is really well known for being very active. But the project I've been working on for the last 5 years is quantifying the earthquake hazard for everything east of the Rockies. And near Memphis in 1811, 1812, there was 3 very large earthquakes there.
Wow.
And that most people don't know. And if it was to happen there, I think the devastation would be much bigger than in L.A. where we're prepared.
Mm-hmm.
The same type of large event happened also in Quebec, northeast U.S. And so, earthquakes can happen pretty much anywhere, but the largest ones are limited to specific places. California, the New Madrid, the near Memphis, and some places in Quebec. And then when you go north to Seattle, where there's a subduction zone there. So that's where the big ones are expected.
I remember there was one back, I think, in 1999, and that was in like 29 Palms or something. And I was living here in Arizona at the time, up in Cave Creek, mm-hmm. and I looked out the window and I saw my pool sloshing around. I felt it.
I had just moved to California. I lived in Marina del Rey in the marina. And
that's where my dad lives.
Oh, really? And the boats were just swinging, the water slushing all over, and we were moving very slow motion for a long time because it's soft soil there. And that was an exciting time. I had moved like a month and a half before to LA, so I was very excited.
That's funny. Most people are frightened out of their minds by earthquakes. You're like, you can't wait.
Well, we have to be careful with that. So it's exciting for the science, but I'm always concerned, of course, that there's going to be damage, loss of life. And so there's something interesting on the science level that I cannot say, an earthquake is exciting. Before I say that, I'm always careful around, right?
interesting is a lot of people from there aren't necessarily thinking as much about it in the sense of fear, but it's funny in the, I don't know if you've seen this movie, Dr. Goulet, but L.A. Story with Steve Martin, where they have a pretty big size earthquake while they're eating brunch. And the lady from out of town looks worried, but everyone else is just eating their food.
Chilling. Yes, I think people generally react when there's earthquakes here, so they're not completely jaded.
Right.
But what I've noticed is a lot of people don't want to hear about it.
Yes.
Because they're scared. But that brings me to the important point of the movie, I think, is that one thing they did right is that the duck cover and hold on. They showed points that it's important to have a plan, although it was not fully implemented, to know where to meet your family and this and that. And of course, the movie had a lot of crazy things happening one after the other, and it was completely chaotic. But this shouldn't scare people to get prepared. And you don't have to become a completely crazy prepper, but you can have a plan with your family. Hey, if something happens, we meet there. I always have running shoes in my car. I have spare water in the garage. I have spare propane tanks in case that there's a big earthquake. I'm just going to cook all the meat really, really hard, and I'll have something to eat. And especially in California, water is really essential. If there was a big earthquake in LA, we could be months without water, really. So those are the things I think that the movie tried to portray in some way. And the doc cover and Hold On is right. Mm-hmm. And people should really think about preparing for earthquakes. And for that, I direct people to the ShakeOut website. So it's yes. ShakeOut.org. And there's a lot of links there on how to get prepared for earthquakes.
Excellent, excellent. And, you know, two more final questions for you. First, a comment. Also, if you're in a building, don't go down the stairs. You go to the roof and you wait for the rock to come in his helicopter.
Well, yes, but...
Not
well,
really.
That was... No, right. Don't.
Okay. Well, the Hoover Dam, is that safe?
Well...
It could happen anywhere, like you said, right?
Yes, but, I mean, it's not... It wouldn't explode like that, I don't think. right? Usually you start to have a little bit of cracks forming, water goes in, that creates pressure, and then you have damage. But even when everything exploded as soon as there was an earthquake, that was quite funny. It's not how it should be. So I don't know about the specifics of the design of the Hoover Dam, but I wouldn't worry that within, you know, seconds of the earthquakes it would explode like that. Not realistic at all.
Okay. One of my favorite places in the United States is, I'm sure you're familiar with it, Quake Lake in Montana.
Never been there.
Have you've heard of it though, right?
No, not at all.
Oh, it's amazing. It's back in the 50s, there was an earthquake and the whole mountain collapsed and formed, it dammed the river and formed a lake. And it's pretty eerie because all these dead trees are growing up from the lake where they used to be all live trees. You should check it out. It's pretty amazing.
Yeah, no, that sounds interesting. No, I was not aware of that.
One last quick question I had real quick is that, especially, you know, out here in Phoenix, a lot of people during the summer, you know, go to Southern California. If there was an earthquake to occur while they're there, now I was always told when I was there when we did our earthquake drills, you know, to go under a desk versus mm-hmm. going to a doorway. You don't want the door mm-hmm. to shut on you. Is that accurate? And maybe yes. What tips would you give if there was a minor quake?
Yeah, and that's really where the dock cover and Hold On came from. Mm-hmm. So you go under a sturdy desk somewhere, you know, sturdy furniture. You go underneath. You try to protect your neck with your hands if you can. But you hold on to this because if there's a lot of shaking, the desk might move away from you. What's most likely to kill you is things falling from the ceiling and hurting you, and doesn't take much to actually really hurt you bad in the head. So the dock cover and Hold On is really the way to go. Of course, there's specific circumstances. If you're right next to an exit and you can run out, which is another thing that's not really real in the movie, people can run. Even though as the ground cracks, this is ridiculous. Nobody could stand if there was this cracking going on, which also is impossible. But there are cases that if you're close to an exit and there's not a lot of tall buildings around you, it might be safe to go outside. I'd probably do that in my house. But in general, the default, go under sturdy furniture and hold on to the furniture because it's going to move with you and you want it to to stay above you to protect you from falling objects. That's really the best thing.
Great, great. And now think back to the movie, because I got you know, one final question for you, but I'm hoping you get it right, because you got to think back to the movie, a certain line. Now, if there is a 9.6 earthquake, who should we call?
Ghostbusters was the first word.
No, I was hoping that's what they would
right,
say.
Ghostbusters, no. Everybody. Right?
Everybody. But it's not going to happen. Okay. 9.6 is not going to happen. And so that brings up the last thing that I thought was completely wrong that people should know. We cannot predict earthquakes.
Okay.
If we did, we'd be famous and rich. We can predict where globally they will happen in a region. We know in California a repeat of a Northridge in the next 30 years is almost certain somewhere in California. But to tell you a day in advance or even a minute or this is not something that's possible. So we cannot give this kind of warning. But I think that's coming up that already exists in Japan and some places in Mexico is an early warning system. Mm-hmm. So that's when an earthquake starts to occur, It takes time for the waves that make the shaking happen to reach you. And if you are far away from the earthquake, you might get an advance notice that can be 5, 10, 20 seconds that gives you time to go under the desk, run outside to protect yourself. But it's called early warning, but sometimes you could get the warning after the shaking if you're very close to where the earthquake is. But outside of that, there's no such thing as prediction. And I think that's important that people realize that.
Good points, good points. Well, one more time, Dr. Christine Goulet, I'm sorry for mispronouncing your name earlier
that
in the segment.
Fine.
Assistant researcher at University of California, Berkeley's Peer Center, again, at Pacific Earthquake Engineering Research Center. One more time, tell us about Monday.
Monday? Oh, yes. Sorry. What's Monday? There's no earthquake on Monday? Okay.
Hope not. So not that you know of.
Yeah, you can't predict it.
Yes, I know. So the Seismological Society of America, we're hosting a Q&A on Twitter. This is Monday, June 1st, from 7 to 8 Pacific. And the hashtag is AskSSA. And you can also put questions with the hashtag San Andreas, and we will retrieve those as well as answering questions live, a little bit like we did today, but with more people asking questions and questions answered.
Excellent. Well, you know, again, we really appreciate your time today, and it was a fascinating segment. We went way beyond the time that I told you that we were going to keep you, but so we thank you very much for joining us on Breakthrough Entertainment.
And thank you, guys. You had great questions. I had put 5 points I wanted to talk about, and y'all brought them up perfectly. So it was gorgeous.
Excellent, excellent. Well, enjoy the rest of your weekend. We'd love to have you on the show again.
Okay, thank you very much. Have a good one.
You too. Take care.
Bye.
Bye-bye. Okay, well, I'm disappointed she got that everybody thing wrong.
Everybody.
I know.
She got Ghostbusters.
Ghostbusters.
Yes.
Yeah, you know what? Who are you going to call?
You know what would have been great is if in the movie somehow they did that. I was thinking, hey, there you go.
Probably
Paul
in the
Giamatti.
Bloopers,
oh, yeah,
sure.
I'm sure he pulled some stuff off like that. But it's very fascinating and interesting, everything going on regarding that. And something to look out for you in the sense where you always, you know, hear about these little things going on, but no reason to panic or anything.
Don't panic,
like
but
the
we can't
movie.
Predict it. We can't
yeah,
predict it. Maybe
exactly.
You should panic. Don't panic, maybe panic. You don't know. We don't know.
You know, just know what the proper precautions are. You'll
exactly,
be okay.
Exactly. Go about your life and you know, just do the whole duck cover and hold on. And, you know, you'll be fine.
Yes.
And so we're not going to do a break here. We're going to have a break in just a few minutes because
we can't do a break until the clock says so.
I know, but we missed a break, so we're going to do an extra break next hour or something. But we do want to make sure that our listeners have a chance to win advanced screening tickets to see either Spy on Tuesday night or Entourage on Monday night. Again,
yes.
You cannot win twice. You can only pick one of these movies. So we're going to count down this time, but have your phones ready. It's 602-252-1480, and you're going to want to be the second caller whenever we say go, okay? So 602-252-1480. 3, 2, 1. Start calling again, 602-252-1480, 602-252-1480. We're looking for the second caller.
So basically the first caller gets the first choice, the first winner.
The first winner gets the first choice. Well, we have multiple.
Oh, okay.
Yeah,
nice.
There'll be additional opportunities, but it's 602-252-1480.
Oh, yeah, no, absolutely. And yeah, I love those motion type rides. So with D-Box, that's what I like. But Star Tours at Disneyland's mm-hmm. one of my favorites. Now, Joseph, I know long ago you were at Disney World. Did they have anything like that there?
You know what they did have? They did have Star Tours. But the thing that I really liked is Alien Encounter thing, extraterrestrial alien encounter. That was only at Disney World. Now, that has since been replaced by Stitch's Escape or something like that.
Right.
But it was an alien in a big tube, and the seats moved, and the alien was spitting on you, and now Stitch spits on you and stuff like that.
Really?
I haven't seen the Stitch thing, but I did see it on YouTube.
That's what everybody loves, to be spit on.
Yeah, it's fantastic.
I know, it is. But that kind of stuff, I wish that this movie would have had that, like the water like thrown in our face and stuff. stuff like that. Yeah. And I feel like I'm drowning.
I bet they could do at some point. I mean, way down the line. But it's kind of like too when at Disneyland and California Adventure Park, you know, like the Bugs Life thing. That's a 3D glasses type of thing. But there's parts in it like, oh, no, there's like a bug that disappeared, and then you feel under your seat, you know, the bug's coming by. Or there is a part where, think Honey, I Shrunk the Audience, I don't believe that's there anymore.
Right.
But where the dog or someone sneezes, and then you feel kind of some water on you.
Yeah.
So stuff like that in a movie theater, that would be amazing. Obviously, you know, technology probably is there to do it since they do it other places. It's just...
Yeah, well,
the
alien thing, they made it feel like someone was like touching your back and like, breathing on your back.
You probably liked that.
Oh yeah, that was wow. Yeah, talk about the bar crawl last night. Some breathing on my back.
Oh, okay.
I have no idea what was going on. I turned around and there was some woman, and I said hello. I didn't know her.
Maybe that was Bobby.
I don't know. It might have been. She looked younger than Bobby, but we have a winner, right?
Yes, so, congratulations to David.
Congratulations, David. Thank you very much. And if you did not win the passes for Spy or Entourage, there's more opportunities to win in the next hour. This is Hole by Randy Travis, one of Greg's favorite songs, Hole.
Yeah.
From Deep Impact, one of his favorite movies.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Morgan Freeman.
This is my rock out theme. Oh, yeah. Take out the shovel, baby.
There we go.
Yeehaw!
Joining us after our break will be Karen Heston, visual effects supervisor at Siren Labs. We'll talk about some of the visual effects, you know, we see in these movies, especially San Andreas. We'll be right back.
Yeehaw! Yeah, baby! But he's still on the bottom, and he can't dig out of the hole.